Hello, everybody. I went back on Dr. Phil, so we're going to be talking about that today. Plus, we're going to do part two of our Jubilee reaction, detransitioners versus transgender individuals. Let's get into it. Young Apollo with the brother. Guys, we're going to react to these videos. Before we get into that, please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single time we're live. That's Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. And sign up for my email list, which is in the description down below. Do we have my computer screen now?
We got it now. We got it now.
Guys, you love it. We keep it around. We're going to react to this Dr. Phil episode. I was recently, well, not so recently, actually. This was months ago now. Taylor, do you remember? Taylor's here, by the way, in Nashville.
I do. I leave for one day and you guys head back to the ranch and mess it all up.
We're so going downhill.
I remember. I call it sabotage.
Sabotage, yeah. It's censorship. Yeah. It's censorship is what it is. But yeah, when did we film this?
Several months ago. I don't know.
It's
like fall.
And yeah. Taylor was supposed to be in the audience here in this Phil episode. So you guys saw the first Dr. Phil episode that came out. That was me and the very, what's a good word for this man that we were up against? You know what? I'm just going to say a professor that we were going back and forth with on cultural appropriation. Nice enough guy. And that was actually the second Dr. Phil episode that I filmed. This was the first one. So this first one is about affirmative action, featuring Candace Owens as well, who's on this. And then two, I believe, school professors who are supporters of affirmative action. And another girl, and I'm so sorry, I forget her name, but she was really sweet and great and was holding down the fort on our end of things. So we're going to look at a video. Taylor was supposed to be in this audience. And then I asked
him. The stupid producer left me in the green room. And yeah. He's like, I'll come get you in 5 minutes. And then like 20 minutes later, he's like, I went and found him. And I'm like, hey, what's going on? He's like, oh, I'll take you now. Oh, just kidding. It's over. So yeah. Gee, thanks, Dr. Phil's guy.
Right.
I'll never forgive you.
While I'm watching this, I'm just picturing Taylor sitting in his green room, just like eating a bagel, waiting for somebody to come and get him. And
I'm very grateful you decided to tell that story and put me on blast in recognition of this. The memories are already painful enough.
It's not his fault. Also, Tyler Fisher is in this episode as well, who is a comedian. Shout out to Tyler. You should check out his show and his YouTube channel. Let's get into this clip.
The very sensitive topic of whether or not white people are discriminated against in education and the workplace.
It's very sensitive.
Is this a made-up issue in the news, or is there a good reason why some people feel this is real? Now, I want to introduce Mala Epinobi, who is a conservative podcast host and a public speaker.
That's so funny. I get called Amala a lot, which makes sense. My name is spelled that way. And if you don't know, that would be probably the inflection you'd use is Amala. And I was in Utah speaking and people would come up to ask me questions in the Q&A line. And they'd be like, it's so nice to meet you, Amala. And like, I've been watching Unapologetic with Amala for so long. And then you could see people in the crowd sort of being like, her name is Amala. But I'm so used to it at this point. I don't correct. If I spent my life correcting people who called me Amala, I would just be doing it all day long. So it's totally fine. I'm like, you know what? It's my parents' fault because it should have been way more clear that my name is Amala. And if it's not clear, hey, who am I? Who am I to tell people?
Amala, you've been listening to everything that we've been talking about here. I said there may be a third factor here. They don't have the opportunities in some of the schools they're coming from to get prepared. And that has to be addressed, but we can get back to that in a minute. But what do you think about what we're talking about so far?
Right. I'll talk to your example that you gave about the Monopoly game and a white person being able to run the track twice over and a black person starting after that. The solution is not to then pick up the black person and run them around the lap four times. The solution is to fix the game and make that equal, which would be a race-neutral future. We should not be looking at race when it comes to college admissions at all.
I can tell I'm so nervous in this because this is obviously the first episode I did of Dr. Phil. First, like, super big TV show to be on where it's just, like, people all over America just have this on their TV running in the background while they're like doing laundry and stuff. So I was so nervous to like make my points. And the way my brain works, especially in scenarios where I'm talking to people who disagree with me, I am constantly listening and like zeroing in on everything they're saying. And if I had like a Google sheet that came out of my brain, it would be 1,000 different arguments that are all like spun and twisted and trying to make the connection before it's my time to speak. So that's the way my brain works. And I'm amazed that real sentences come out of my mouth when people call on me.
So you're thinking faster than ChatGPT. You just have to slow it down. You're too fast is the problem.
Yeah, I guess I do need to slow down. That is the problem.
And when it comes to things like affirmative action, if we truly said we cared about minorities, it wouldn't be disproportionately affecting Asian Americans, as Candace said, like it is now. Why do we not care about that minority group?
We absolutely care about all minority groups, just like we care about all students. But I think everyone has a significant misunderstanding of these policies.
Let's hear it.
Comprehensive or holistic in nature. This is one factor among many other factors. And then we say, across all those factors, looking at these and taking them in tandem, is this student best prepared? Because it's not just about your intelligence, mm-hmm. that's important. It's also about your drive, about your resilience, about your ability to overcome challenges. And that's what makes you successful.
Okay, so his response to that, let me pause on a better face of mine. Okay, there we go. His response to that, that's not all that much better, but we'll keep it. So he initially said, you know, if we're looking at life like a game of Monopoly, white people are starting off playing the game with $1,000 in the bank, and they're starting off with 10 properties, and black people are starting off basically in jail on the Monopoly board. And that very well might have been true historically, and I think that's something to be acknowledged. But like I said before, that does not mean you take black people and you go, oh, well, here's $2,000 and here's 20 properties, and why don't you go around the Monopoly track a few times and see what all you can gather up and see what else you can take from other people. The goal, I don't know how Monopoly works. I don't know if you can tell. I've never played Monopoly. The solution would be to clear the board and say, hey, we're all going to start out equally at zero, and we're going to see what we can accomplish throughout this game. Not to just let them run around the track like they're doing with affirmative action. And his response to that was, well, people don't understand. Affirmative action is a holistic view that includes race, which means, you know, you could have an Asian kid and a black kid who are doing all of the same things, but we just, you know, add race in there. It's just one part of a 1,000-piece pie that we're looking at when going into college admissions and scholarships. And of course, you want to look at scholarships and applications holistically and look at what they're doing as far as extracurriculars, how well they're doing academically, what volunteer work are they doing, and we want a holistic view. But race is not part of a holistic view. And even when you account for all of the things that that man just said and saying race is just a small sliver of it, he has no explanation for the fact that Asian students who are applying to Ivy League institutions are having to score upwards of 200 points higher on their SATs than their black counterparts, even when taking into account volunteer work and extracurriculars and sports and how they're doing academically. 200 plus points. Can you imagine being a young student in the most stressful time of your life, and particularly within an Asian household, knowing that you have to get 200 points or more higher than your black counterparts just to get your foot in the same door? It's ridiculous. It's racist. I don't know how that isn't clear. And I will say that these two guys who were guests on the show were very kind, and I could tell that they were trying to compassionately drive forward their point, but their point is based in discrimination, and that's all that we're trying to get to the bottom of here.
Yeah, it's tough to say you're kindly implementing or promoting discrimination.
And right.
You're right. He's saying, yeah, we're really nuanced in how we do this. That's just one slice of the pie where we have all these different factors that we consider. But also, if you're white, we're just probably not going to pick you. And if you're a minority, if you're BIPOC, we're definitely weighting the scales in your favor. Yeah. If you have an a priori commitment to weighting the scales in the favor of minorities, then by definition, that's just unfair. And so, you know, to your point, we should start with a board that is blank, and everyone starts in the same place, and that's fairness.
And it seems like they're doing anything not to acknowledge that point, that it's just simply not fair. And it that's the, I think, frustrating part about debating with people over the subject matter is if you were coming to the table honestly about what this is and how it's being implemented, there's no way you would see it as fair. So to sit down in front of somebody who's constantly telling you, no, it's fair, it's fair, it's a holistic view, it doesn't matter, it's just a small slice of the pie, it should be no slice of the pie. Your race should have nothing to do with anything that you get in life. And it's so hard to get people to make that admission.
With those factors taken into account, Asian students and white students are discriminated against when compared to their Black counterparts. How is that the case? And it seems that with affirmative action, we've dictated we care about Black students, we care about Hispanic students. These are the minorities who are going to benefit
Let's
from
not forget
this,
Native
and
American.
Asians are not, and Native Americans. But the through line is not necessarily socioeconomic status. It doesn't seem to be resources. It seems to be that these are the minority groups that we feel bad for. We don't feel bad for Asian Americans because they have a culture of high academic standing. They have a culture of drive and of facing adversity. We look at Black students and Hispanic students and Native American
that's
students.
We are inferior.
And
that
we
is
pity
what,
them.
That's what makes my blood boil. I mean, it's just I am not less than you because you are white. I don't need you to look at me and feel bad for me because of the color of my skin. And that's effectively what you're doing every time you take an application. You say, oh, well, this girl's Black, so I kind of feel bad for her. So I'm going to put her at the top of the line. It's just not necessary. I believe, right, that Black Americans are capable of performing in the same capacity as their white peers. You two don't actually believe that.
Because I actually believe
if you
that.
Support affirmative action, you are basically saying that Black Americans cannot do it on their own.
No, what I'm saying is that there's a history of racism and exclusionary practices. That instead, we're reducing it all the way down just to race. And what these admissions practices are actually doing is saying, no, there's a constellation of factors that we're considering.
Keep hearing that same argument.
In the holistic review of this application.
You keep hearing it. It's a constellation. It's a constellation. I'm sorry, but no point in that constellation should be race. That's it. That is the bottom of the argument there. What I will say is Candace says something that you don't actually think that Black people can achieve things. And here's where the split is, because they do actually believe that Black people can achieve things. They don't believe it in practice. They're not analyzing their practices enough to recognize that what they are in fact doing is reinforcing the belief that Black people do need help, that Hispanic people do need help, that Native Americans need help, but not the Asians, of course, because we always leave the Asians to fend for themselves, right? So they are reinforcing those beliefs in practice. I genuinely believe that these two men think that Black people are capable of anything and everything. However, their minds and their ideologies has distorted what they're doing in practice. And that's the issue. So when we accuse these people of not thinking that Black people are capable, you are on a little bit of treacherous ground there, because you run the risk of having them invalidate everything that you think based on that statement in particular. I do think they think Black people are capable. I just think they don't recognize how what they're putting into practice says the exact opposite.
And this reminds me of how when you tell your story, you talk about how someone at the leftist organization that you were working at looked at you and said, you just don't understand how oppressed you are whenever you started questioning some of those things. And
yep.
Watching this, I recall that story, because you have this professor who happens to be white just kind of explaining to two Black women how they don't understand how oppressed that they are.
Right.
And to the point about the constellation of factors that go into it, it's like, yeah, you can have a constellation of minerals that are enhancing a water and just a little bit of poop. But if there's poop in there, then that's ruining
right.
the entire product. And if you have discrimination in your policies with how you're picking people, that's the point. It's unfair. It ruins the purity of the principle of fairness. And we're not operating from principle of fairness being something that we enshrine as something that we don't compromise on, regardless of factors. We're saying, no, we're gonna re-engineer reality. We're looking at this historical context, and it's on me to weigh how much extra these people deserve and how far ahead this group needs to be on the monopoly board. I can't remember who said it, but someone I came across a clip the other day that said the term BIPOC itself has a hierarchy in it, because it's BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, People of Color. Black first, then Indigenous, then people of color. I think it was Michael Schellenberger on Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
But even that, who gets to decide how much further ahead or how much more we prioritize Black people over Indigenous people, over the rest of the people of color, and over Hispanic people versus Asians, then versus white people? It's just when you set yourself up as the arbiter of that, then you've created this new elite class of people who are just operating on their own special enlightened knowledge. And that becomes this this beast that you can't control on its own. And then the way that you mitigate against that is just enshrining principles of, hey, we're just going to treat everyone fairly. And, you know, what happens, happens. And no, the outcomes aren't always going to be perfectly equitable. Yep. But that's the real world.
That is the real world. We get it. Discrimination occurred in the past. You do not fix past discrimination with current discrimination. If you are going to move forward with somewhat of a civil rights movement saying that discrimination is wrong, it has always been wrong and will always be wrong, you don't fix it by discriminating in the present. I understand that the mindset behind this is that Black people had something stolen from them and therefore they deserve some sort of reparative measure, which is exactly what affirmative action is. It's exactly what reparations are, which is what we're talking about here in California, where they're having a conversation about giving $640 billion to Black residents of California. For those of you who don't know, California was a free state, so the conversation should not be even being had here. But a conversation about $640 billion being awarded to Black residents is being had right now. The issue I take with affirmative action and conversations about reparations, these are totally logical conversations to have if something has been taken from you. But the Black Americans who are living in the America of today, there has not been anything taken from them. Now, you can argue about generational wealth and generational building, but the farther you are away from the crime or transgression, the smaller that conversation should be. And right now, the conversations we're having surrounding affirmative action and reparations are far too big for how far we are in history from this transgression of slavery and Jim Crow. You know, when you should have had a conversation about reparations and affirmative action and getting Black people educated to the same standards as white people when they weren't enslaved anymore. When you got rid of Jim Crow, that's when those conversations should have been had. It is a shame that the country didn't have those conversations to the full extent, but that does not mean that in now 2023, a Black person running around in America with all the opportunities laying at their feet has a right to run to the government or run to their community and say that you owe me something. And that's exactly what's happening with affirmative action.
You raised from the applications.
Is basically making it about race. You're saying these are the Black people, these are the white people, these are the Asian people, these are the Native American people, as you mentioned. But as one of the audience members said, what about people who are of mixed race? You know, I'm of mixed background. What am I supposed to mark on an application? Am I supposed to mark multiple boxes? And plus,
mark
if you
black.
Are painting people as an oppressor, if you're white,
that's
and
a
then
terrible
saying
thing to
that
tell
you're oppressed.
Well, it's the truth because you believe
color,
in affirmative action. So I said, mark black. If you're a mixed student, I'm an interracial relationship, so I can speak to this. I have a son that's half white and a son that's half black and a daughter that's half white and half black. Okay. They're going to mark black because I know that there are people like you at the universities who will say, well, because this person is black, I'm just going to let them in.
No, they're going to mark black because they're black.
Woo! Let's unpack that little moment because the clip cuts off there. Let's unpack that moment. Okay. So she says, I'm mixed race. What am I supposed to put on an application? Candace says, put black. Put black. And what an interesting movement that would be if all of a sudden we just had simultaneously students who are going into college just mark off different races on their applications to just confuse admission staffers and see what happens and see how much equity we can bring about when you confuse the people who are trying to use your race as some sort of token of oppression that you can use for social status and scholarships and your admission into a college. That would be fascinating. But let's get away from that experiment and think about being a mixed race person. I'm a mixed race person. When I was in high school and I was applying for scholarships or essay contests, I had multiple white teachers tell me, mark black. And I would ask them, there's not two options in the race box. Which one do I mark? Do I mark white or do I mark black? Mark black. Because black is going to put you at the top of the list. And they admitted that. Straight to my face, mark black. That's what's going to bring about the best outcome. Does that sound racist to y'all? Switch it out for any other race. Mark white. That's going to bring you the best outcome, buddy. You know, when you're applying to Harvard, if you check that little white box, you're at the top of the list, my friend. Sounds pretty racist. So that is exactly what's happening. And he says, well, that's disgusting or what a horrible thing to tell somebody to do. Why? Why? It's very much superficial. Who cares? If race does not influence your thinking, it doesn't influence how capable you are. It doesn't influence what you're going to be like as a student. So why is that the most disgusting thing to do, to mark something? And then Candace says, well, I have biracial children because Candace has a white husband. And he said, if your children marked black, they're black. Her children are black and white, just like I'm black and white, which means they can mark either race or both races. And that would be Correct. But her children are not just simply black. And what he's espousing is actually that sort of one blood, that one drop of blood theory, that if you have one drop of black blood in your entire body, that makes you a black person. Her kids are black because Candace had them. We're reinforcing just really bad ideas throughout this conversation. And it might be packaged in a nice, compassionate, and kind man's body in his mind, but they're not nice ideas. They really are not. They're in fact super destructive. And you guys can check out more from this Dr. Phil episode. There's several other clips. You should check out Tyler Fisher, who very powerfully talks about his story of being a white comedian trying to chase his dreams and actually being turned away by an agency because he's white. And they told him, it's just not a good time for white dudes right now. So when we talk about these issues in the macro, it can be really easy to get lost in just the different groups and the discussions and Asian this and black that. But when you hear from somebody who is trying to chase their dream and has the talent to and the moxie and the ambition to go for it, and then they're turned away simply because of the color of their skin, it's a little bit harder to defend that belief that affirmative action is something that we should be striving for. Very difficult.
The prefer not to say checkbox has become my best friend on a lot of these forms. As a straight white male, you know, you want to be checking the, I'm just not going to say anything, so you can't discriminate against me on that basis. Right. Scott, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. But there's also the option of multiple races, which, like, if you look at it, you could potentially make the argument that you are a mix of a multitude of races.
Yep.
And so that may be a more accurate answer.
Yeah. At this point, fuck it. Just put whatever you want, guys. Just put whatever you want in that race box. And who's to say anyways? Who's to say that Taylor isn't black?
All descend from Africa anyway?
Yeah, isn't that the whole thing that everybody's trying to say? You know, Jesus was black. We're all from Africa. Isn't that what we're trying to claim right now anyway? So why not? Why not? You gonna tell Taylor he's not black?
Look at him.
Look
racist.
At him.
Got a bunch of racists.
Yeah, you
stop
don't know.
Oppressing me.
You don't know. You could be an albino. You don't know. You have no idea what's going on. And race is far more superficial than what we're going to talk about right now, which is sex. And we're going to get back to that Jubilee video, detransition versus trans people. Again, like this video if you're having fun in this conversation and like what we have to say. We want more people to hear from us and hear this side of the story because it's hard to get this side of the story these days. My Jubilee
Real quick,
episode.
Amala, before we get into this, we had a poll on the chat on the YouTube channel, and 60% of the audience thinks that you should correct people when they mispronounce your name.
So. Dude.
Just throwing that out there.
I'd have to make a career of it. It would be a while of me doing that all day long.
I had a fun story. I had to do it your first time on the Candace Owens show.
That is true.
I went with you to the filming and she mispronounced your name and I grabbed the producer and I was like, hey, can we have Candace do a pickup shot of her saying Amala's name correctly? And they did at the end and it was no big deal. So, you know, shout out to Candace and Daily Wire team.
That's why we keep Taylor around. Why we keep Taylor around. They handle that.
Yeah, I definitely think you should say something, especially if we're filming something and they mispronounce. And then it's like, hey, please.
At this point, it's like a running joke, you know?
My favorite is when we are like, we're doing interviews or whatever, and they're like, in the preparation, people ask like, so how do we pronounce it? And you're like, Amala. And they're like, okay, got it, thanks. And they're like, we've got Amala Epinobi with us today.
Yeah. And that's another thing without not correcting people. I correct them and then they just get it wrong anyways. Yeah. There's something about my name that you just want to say it that way. And now, you know what? I accept it. Call me what you want. I don't even care at this point. My Jubilee episode, Anti-Feminist versus Feminist, is coming out, I think, on the 9th, which is, I believe, Sunday. And it's going to be really interesting because the conversation just started off. I could feel like, oh no, this is not gonna go well. I mean, it was fine. We had good moments, but it really depends on who you get. I wish they had gotten more people in the vein of modern day feminism because the men who were representing feminist views just had like old school feminist views for the most part. So nothing to go after too much. But I am going to actually be filming a podcast with one of the guys who was featured in that episode. His name is John. We're filming that podcast tomorrow at the Jubilee headquarters, so that'll be out soon enough too. So I must have said something good because they invited me back to have a conversation about breaking this down. Now, let's get back into this detransition versus trans video. This next prompt is, transitioning improved my sex life. Now, obviously, we can't really have an opinion on this. This is a experience that they have themselves, and we have fortunately not experienced. Let's see.
Sex life.
Improved. Okay, so 5 of them move forward.
Who wants to start?
I could start.
Man, I'm embarrassed.
It's a weird question.
Not to say that my sex life was bad before, but I think transitioning and coming into my body and feeling comfortable in my skin allowed me to open up more and allowed me to not only be better in bed, but also explore what my sexuality looks like.
Yeah. Being trans also like made sex really complicated for me too, because I'm a straight guy and I pass very well, and majority of the women that I've been with, I would have to eventually kind of like break it to them that I was trans and deal
hopefully
with a lot
soon
of rejection. And with somebody, I would never let girls touch me or see me without clothes on. Not having a penis made me feel inferior as a man, and that no one would want me, which is why I like rejected that part of myself and never even let it be loved. It took a lot of really accepting that people were going to accept me and be attracted to me and love me and want to give me pleasure regardless of what was in my pants. And that took a long time. It took until I was like, I think I was 21, when my ex-girlfriend and I started dating. From that point on, I realized that just letting someone love me was half the battle. And once I let that piece come into play, I mean, it changed my life.
Wow. A lot to unpack there. Now, a lot of people be like, oh, well, why are you even having this discussion? Whatever. But for most people, this is a big part of livelihood. Even if you're viewing sex as just purely a procreative measure for your life and your ability to create a family, it's not a marginal part of really anybody's existence. So to hear this is really, it's kind of devastating to hear from people who are battling with this, but also trying to find love and find somebody to accept them. I cannot imagine what the struggle must look like if you already are waking up disliking what you see in the mirror and feeling an incongruence with your mind and your body, and then trying to add somebody else to that equation. That is really, really interesting. What a dynamic. But I can also understand what Lucky said of, oh, I had this perception of myself. Once I had my body match the perception that I had of myself, I feel more comfortable. Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. I'm curious to hear from the detransitioners here on, I imagine they're going to have conversations about some of the side effects of having undergone medical treatment and how that affects the body, which has not been touched on here yet. And I'm also curious to see if the trans people admit to any medical issues that they have now got to deal with because they have transitioned, because right now we're just talking about feelings, and once my perception matched my mind, then I felt more comfortable with myself. And that's one part of the pie, but the other part is just medically, what is that like for you now that you've transitioned?
And real quick, I just have to respond to this sentence that was said, that not having a penis made me feel inferior as a man. Mm-hmm. That's just a sentence that is so on the nose that really, independent of this individual person, I mean, I have compassion for them. who told you that you could be a man without a penis? That's a lie.
Right.
And that whoever led you to believe that and told you that you could is responsible for that feeling of inferiority and perpetual disjointedness. And, you know, going down this route, there is no path of not feeling inferior as a man without a penis, because you can't be a man without one. And that's just a statement of fact. It's not hateful. It's just, that is the truth. And I don't know. I just, that being a, having him say that sentence, it was just so on the nose, I had to respond.
Yeah. It's just, it shows just how twisted things have become of like, it shouldn't even, I mean, it's no wonder that the discomfort is there and the uncomfortability is there, because somebody sold you a false bill of goods and told you that this is a possibility, that there is at some point there's a point where you cross the threshold into manhood here, and there isn't. There just isn't a point where that threshold is going to be crossed. It's just really, really unfortunate.
Do you want to go?
Y'all can go. I'll go last.
I mean, so even though I detransitioned, in the beginning, especially when I was on hormones, like, it increased my sex drive a lot. And there were a lot of aspects to that that was, like, enjoyable to explore my fluidity for sure. I was able to date a lot of people. And I think, like, from detransitioning, it's, like, the opposite of that. Like, my sex drive completely changed.
Well, I'm assuming this is a biological woman who was pumped full of tea. So that'll probably do that, especially, yeah, especially to a female body. I would imagine that would have that effect.
Way that, like, there's good aspects to not being horny 24/7. It helped me be more comfortable in my body, even with detransitioning, which sounds weird, but, like, having a trans male body was, like, so different from the norm. So, like, I had to accept certain parts of myself. So, like, even with detransitioning, it helps me accept, like, certain parts of myself that I don't have still.
Absolutely.
I did identify as a gay man before I transitioned. And, like, those relationships, I feel like I always kind of had, like, out-of-body experiences when we were, like, intimate. And even after I transitioned, before I had bottom surgery, I, like, just, like, the anxiety and the dysphoria that I would feel whenever I was intimate or, like, a partner would try to be intimate with me was just, like, crippling. So then when I had surgery and I felt more affirmed in my body and, you know, everything is, it feels right to me now, I'm finally able to have those intimate connections with people and, you know, form those deeper bonds. So amazing. It's really helped me a lot.
I'm so happy for you. That's amazing.
Thanks.
Yeah, of course.
Mm. When I came out as trans and I was 18, I moved to Miami. And it wasn't until I got my gender affirming surgeries where I was where I did lose my virginity, because I was just not comfortable doing that. I was like, I'm not presenting in my best light. Right. And I think I could get there.
Yeah, for
somebody.
Me, I was like, I'm not fitting the role that I'm supposed to play in this relationship.
It felt weird. Absolutely. And you also attract a different type of partner. Back in my day, I used to attract what we call a chaser versus someone who was...
A person who dates, hooks up with a certain type of person, such as trans people. Okay.
Genuinely attracted to the female form, which is someone who I wanted to... Like, that's the role I felt. And so that's where I was comfortable. And now I'm comfortable.
Did I miss what was... Okay, so she said, hold on, let me listen to back what was said there.
And I think I could get there.
Yeah, for me, it was like, I'm not fitting the role that I'm supposed to play in this relationship.
I'm not fitting the role that I'm supposed to play in this relationship. I wish we could expand on that. I don't know what that means and why that means I am a woman. I'm just not understanding. I get the uncomfortability with being intimate with another partner. I get that this person previously identified as a gay man. I get the feeling of maybe feeling an incongruence with the role in your relationship. I'm just wondering how we get from those three things and jump to I am a woman. What happens in between those two points that means I am a woman? I don't understand.
No, it felt weird. And you also attract a different type of partner.
Okay,
back
we
in
listen
my
to
day,
this again.
I used to attract what we call a chaser versus someone who was genuinely attracted to the female form, which is someone who I wanted to, like, that's the role I felt. And so that's where I was comfortable. And
okay. So used to attract people who were purely looking to date a trans person. And because he looked masculine and feminine at the same time, that type of person was attracted to him. Now that he looks way more feminine and is somewhat of a passing woman, regular straight guys who are attracted to women in general are going after him and saying, oh, well, you look like a woman, I want to pursue you. So that's what they're trying to do, is to get as far as they can into the realm of being perceived as a woman, which two of them, if you don't hear them speak, are pretty much there. Would you agree? I would say those two there, I would be like, oh, that's a woman. On the street,
fairly close. I've learned to be have my antenna up these days and be skeptical when you see some certain signs. But I can admit that, you know, in passing, you might mistake some of these people for women.
Right. On my Jubilee podcast, Jubilee Middle Ground, that's coming out on Sunday, they had a trans man who was a male feminist on the panel. Didn't notice until it was said, and I was like, wow. You got me. I didn't notice.
Now I'm comfortable. in Virginia. Like, Virginia, the T word did not exist. That was on Jerry Springer and Maury Povich, and that's where that stayed. Mm. No one was trans. And
that's
so
true.
I transitioned when I was about 18. I moved to Miami, and my joke is that I hit the tarmac, and I said, I'm a woman, by the way. I remember I came out to my mom, and I was super nervous because I'd come out as gay years and years before, because that was so much easier. But when I came out, I remember my mom just asked if I was happy, if I was healthy, and if I was gonna finish school, because she had already paid for it. And I said yes.
Can the disagreeer step forward?
Transition definitely ruined my sex life. I was fine with my penis, but a year after estrogen, I felt like that part didn't belong on me anymore. So I went ahead and had sex reassignment surgery. After that, my sex drive was gone pretty much. I kept on having complications. I wasn't able to keep my new vagina open despite rigorous dilation. I had multiple revisions, including colon vaginoplasty. I just got some of my sex drive back last year when I started detransitioning with testosterone, but it's kind of traumatic to have male sex drive back without my penis. Mm. Also, I want to say that sexuality is fluid. My sexuality has definitely changed once I lost my testosterone. Before, I was strictly attracted to men. After I lost my testosterone, I was attracted to people in general, because now I didn't have this like male sex drive, so I couldn't relate to men as much. You know, as I wanted to have sex, but I just wanted to hold hands and cuddle. Yeah.
So much going on there. So much going on. What a roller coaster. How you make it to the other end of all of that switching on you. I mean, kudos to this person for being here and saying, you know, here's what I went through and here's all the back and forth, and being able to like see through what is probably a really clouded experience of having to like flip back and forth and all this stuff. What is also another interesting through line is how many of these people saying, well, I identified as a gay man prior to transitioning, or I identified as a lesbian woman prior to transitioning. And Deborah So talks about this a lot. A lot of these individuals who end up transitioning are simply just gay men who are feminine and maybe have a hard time accepting that about themselves. Not to say that that's the case for all of these people, but there does seem to be an element of, oh, I'm a gay man, I don't want to be that. Maybe I will transition to be a woman. Or you begin to convince yourself that because you are a gay man, that that means maybe you are a woman deep down in your brain, as many of these people believe. So it's not surprising to hear that that's the background for a lot of these individuals. But interestingly enough, even though they switched in their identities of, I previously identified as a gay man, now I am trans, they're advocating that if kids come to you and say, I'm trans, you should affirm that child and you should take them to a gender clinic and have them seek medical care from a professional. Even though they changed their minds about their identities in a very deep way, a complete flip here, they want kids who make this decision for themselves, essentially on a whim, that they feel like a boy inside a girl's body, those kids should be able to medically transition. It doesn't make sense. The math is not mathing. It does not add up.
And now my body dysmorphia / actual gender dysphoria as well is worse than ever before. I do feel like I'm stuck in a surgically created body. Mm-hmm. I just don't think I've been really myself by trying to become a woman. Mm. Yeah. So transition did take a lot from me.
It seems like Shape, I believe is her name, has worked through this a lot. Like there's just purely no emotion in saying, this is what I went through. I did this, I did this, I did this. Now I just feel like I'm living in a surgically created body. There's just nothing there anymore, which makes me think this has been processed as far as it could possibly be processed. And it seems like she's very much accepted the position that she's been placed in, and what a position that is. Wow.
And I think the reason why I think Shape introduced themselves as he, she, they. So I guess there's no wrong way to refer to Shape. But it seems like Shape has the best head on Shape's shoulders. because they have figured out how to find their identity not in sexuality and not make that the primary thing, and work their way, having gone to the extremes in all directions that you can go by making your sexuality or it's part of your identity or the foundation of your identity. That failed her, that failed Shape, and now he, she, they is clawing the he, she, their way back to a place where you're identifying based on your personality, based on your experiences, based on a more holistic sense of who you are. And that's where it should start. That's where a healthy sense of identity starts. And, you know, one of the things that Shape said was sexuality is fluid. And I think that to a large degree, that's true, not in so much in the sense of like all this, you know, everything's all, you know, identifies whatever a non-binary, but more in the sense of, you know, you can separate your sexual experiences, things that give you pleasure or arouse you, from the core identity of who you are. Just because you have an experience or something turns you on doesn't mean you need to adapt your entire identity around that right immediately and permanently, and entrench yourself in a community or worldview that tells you that is where that's the box that you're now in, that's what you need to stay, and here's the path that you need to go down, whether that's the path of activism, whether that's the path of gender transition surgery or whatever it may be. It's like a healthy sense of self is, you know, sexuality, I'm not saying that it has nothing to do with it, but I am saying that it's a much smaller part, just like we say with the race conversation. Like don't this is the problem with identity politics and the way that this modern way of thinking has become, is everyone wants to just categorize everybody. And it's like, no, be an individual, be who you are. And you can place your experiences and integrate them properly and healthily when you're an individual first and your other, you know, elements fit into that. But whenever one of those has to define your whole being, then you become susceptible to ideology, and you get into, you know, locked, boxed ways of thinking that end up being incongruent with reality and end up disappointing you and perpetuating things like dysphoria, things like depression, and just things like making you miserable.
Yeah. And to your point about like sexuality, like, yeah, people are aroused by certain things. Certain things will be something that lights up for you and other things won't. And there's no better evidence than what Shape just said about their experience going, when I was on testosterone, I was attracted to a whole different group of people. When I was off of testosterone and taking estrogen, I was attracted to a whole different group of people. Do you see how these things like switch and flip depending on the state that your body is in, what you're being exposed to? But then all these people go, oh, well, your five-year-old says he has a crush on a boy in kindergarten. He's gay. He's gay. And you better treat him as such. And that's the label that he has forever. And oh, he likes girl stuff. He's a girl. You need to transition him. You need to do all this. Like, experiences come and go, and your exposure to things and what you learn in life is going to change the way that you relate to certain things. It's going to change the way that you react to certain things. And there's no better evidence than this person's story here.
That's been really, really hard. Yeah.
It's okay. Yeah. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
If you had like found the results that you desired in the beginning, would you feel differently than you do now?
No, because I realize I just miss being a man, you know, I just miss being obsessed about sex and money. I don't want to do the whole emotional thing. And I'm talking about stereotypes, okay? So I regret, it's just like now I'm a medical patient for life. Also having sex and back, it just reminds me that I lost all those years I could have been having fun, whether it's chasers or, I definitely have internalized homophobia. So internalized homophobia also pushed me into transition because I felt like chasers weren't good enough because I wanted to be a woman. I wanted to escape my homosexuality.
Wow. Out of all the people who are on this panel, just like the honesty that shines through in what this person's saying, you can recognize that they've just accepted the position that they're in. How many people do you think would be able to come up and say, yeah, I have internalized homophobia, and that's literally what dealt to me, and it's not a bad thing, it's not a malicious thing, it's just what happened to me, it's just what I was dealing with, and it led me to make A, B, and C decision. And the one sentence that should definitely not be lost in what was just said is, I am a medical patient for life. You are a medical patient for life when you make this decision for yourself. And the fact that we are allowing people to just so frivolously decide this for their lives, where Luca here, who is all the way to the left on this panel, said, My first medical intervention was a double mastectomy. The first medical intervention this person received was a double mastectomy. They don't even do that for cancer patients. For cancer patients whose breasts are filled with tumors, that's not even the first medical intervention for them most of the time. And to think that you just went to the wrong person and expressed, I'm not feeling congruent with my body and my mind right now, and then they push you down that path, is horrifying to think of.
Yeah, I just want to say, of all these people on this panel, who do you think is the most comfortable with who they are? Who's coming across that way? And I would say it's got to be Shape.
Yeah, and what an interesting, because you would probably look at somebody like that and be like, oh, you're not comfortable with yourself at all. I mean, if I'm being honest, if I look at somebody who's got 1,000 different colors in their hair, they're wearing a bunch of makeup, they're, you know, clearly drawing somewhat of an attention to themselves, the nails are all colorful and long, I would make the judgment and be like, oh, that person is probably not comfortable with who they are, without even taking into account that there could be many reasons why this appearance exists right now, because they're sort of living in a limbo of, I don't know what to present myself as. I know what I am. I know what I was born as, but I don't know what to do with this body now that has just been recreated and changed. So it's just interesting to see, because that would not be the person that I would immediately flock to and think you are the most sound in who you are as an individual. Interesting, our biases.
At the end of the day, I'm a gay man and I'm still living with internalized homophobia because therapists actually never helped me with that.
It's fascinating.
Nope. Lost screen again. Of course we did. Let's do it. Okay.
Men and women, and in my transition, I felt like I had an internalized homophobia when I was with men because I didn't feel like a gay man. And that was really hard for me to figure out, because I had had this journey for so long, and a lot of sexual experiences were good, but I was on Grindr and I'm sleeping with these men and they're treating me how I would want to be treated in a social setting, but I'm like, I was really, really masculine in my presentation, but I tended to be kind of feminine in my roles within sex. And so I think that also got me to realize that I wanted to detransition, because it was a reflection of the relationships that I had. Like, to follow kind of some stereotypes, like, I did miss being a woman in some of those social settings, like with how women interacted with me, with how men interacted with me. So that's heavily relatable to that for sure. So I do not regret my transition. Shocking, I know. That was a really great time for me in the beginning. I really was able to explore and express myself in ways that I could not have done without hormones and surgery. I learned so much about how people treat people based on gender and looks in general. I feel like I would not be the person, especially the confidence and security that I have within myself, if I didn't transition as presenting as a woman.
Well, yeah, you certainly would not be the person you are right now had you not transitioned. So that statement is always it's always going to be true for anybody. I wouldn't be the person that I am now if I didn't wake up this morning and drink a glass of water. Anything that you do throughout your day is going to lead to the person that you are at the very present. So it doesn't quite make sense to regret anything that you've done in life, but you can certainly hope to safeguard others and alert them to the snake in the yard, I guess is how they say that. It's a strange question, right? Because of course some people are going to say, well, yeah, I regret it, but it doesn't, there's really no use in regretting things that you've done in life. It's, in my opinion, a waste.
In this world, my dynamic with men in general is so much different. I mean, I was very insecure, very submissive, very quiet, and now I'm able to speak up for myself because of that.
Yeah.
I bet that is fascinating. And that's one of the questions that I posed to the trans person who was on my Jubilee episode, saying, I said, you've been in a female space as a biological woman, and now you've transitioned to where, to most people, you would be viewed as a man. What privileges did you gain in going through that transition, and what did you notice was different about your life? And I don't remember exactly what their answer was, so I guess we'll see that on Sunday. But that is an interesting experience. You get to live, and I'm assuming she's saying that people viewed her as male, so she was integrated into male spaces and men were seeing her as just another one of the boys and talking and engaging with her in the same way that they would any man. Yeah, I'm sure that's an experience that let you learn a lot about yourself, because you're in a whole different group. It's like being transmitted into a different species and like being able to look around. And even though you're not really on the same wavelength as them, getting integrated into their world and they're sharing with you as if you are. So yeah, I would imagine that's an experience that is highly formative in what you view yourself to be as an adult, how you view the world, how you engage with people, and just being able to know what men are like behind closed doors without having been perceived as a woman is, I bet, very interesting.
I was actually going to say, during my transition, I didn't actually have a high sex drive from the hormones. And ever since I came back, my sex drive has been higher ever since. And I think it's because I'm no longer on the estrogen. My testosterone levels are increased after I changed back to being who I was originally born as. And it also kind of opened up my eyes to say, maybe I wasn't really a female. This is probably what I would like my future spouse to have, to look upon it. And I'm proud that I actually have that sex drive back again, because I felt like I lost it for a long time.
The LGBTQ plus community is not as accepting as they claim.
Well, of course that's true. Once you label anything as a community, it's gonna splinter into people who are accepting and not accepting of all different things. There's gonna be L's who hate the G's. There's gonna be B's who hate the T's. There's gonna be Q's who hate the LGBs. There's all, as soon as you lump people together into any sort of community where you say you're supposed to have a certain set of beliefs, they're all gonna start not accepting each other. It's just human nature. Everybody should walk forward for this. It's just on pure principle alone, everybody should walk forward. Mm-hmm. And there they go.
Musical chairs.
Musical chairs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed to agree. That is true information.
There's still so much transphobia within the LGBT people in the LGBT community that hasn't been addressed yet.
Mm-hmm. Shoot, there's transphobia within trans people. Absolutely.
When I was transitioning in high school, I searched for acceptance from the cis hetero world. And now I feel like I'm doing the opposite and searching for acceptance from my own community half the time.
Okay, let's break down that sentence. First, when I was going through this journey, I was seeking acceptance from the cisgendered het community, heterosexual community. Now I find I'm seeking acceptance from my own community. Now, there's something wrong with both of those statements. And the something wrong with both of those statements is that you are seeking acceptance from external forces in your life. You are seeking acceptance from a group of people that are not you. And the real journey in life is, how do I accept myself? And how do I recognize that this is the body that I was born in? This is the mind that I was given. My thoughts are going to shift and change. My values are going to shift and change. But how do I love what I have been given and what I have to work with and strive towards an ideal within that space? But we have now decided we need to search for acceptance from other people. And everybody's doing it, mind you. Everybody's doing it. Everybody is searching for acceptance in their own ways. And that's something that we have to figure out for ourselves and decide where our blinders are. But if you continue to lead a life where you are constantly in this perpetual search for somebody else's acceptance, you will always be miserable, because there is never going to be a community of people that fully accept you for who you are, because they are not you. And that's just the unfortunate thing in all of this. It seems like a lot of these people are just searching for to be accepted. They're searching to pass as a woman. They're searching to pass as a man, which means your entire perception of yourself and how much you love yourself, you gauge on how other people respond to you, how other people accept you. And you're already starting off on the wrong foot. It's a really dangerous way to think about yourself.
When I was in college, the queer community on my campus hated me because I did like heteronormative like guy stuff. I played lacrosse, I was in a frat, but like I wasn't that guy, I guess, that they had in their head. And every time I would go to the LGBT club meetings, I would get like they would stare into my soul. Like I was just this awful thing. And it's always just made me feel invisible and small in whatever space I'm in. Mm. And I find that just really disheartening.
And it happens in a lot of other cultures and communities as well, too. So
it's funny that
it just happens.
You mentioned like the transitioning in high school part and like that shift from you know, searching for acceptance outside and then turning around and then having to search for acceptance within the community.
Yeah.
Because I did notice that when I was still living as a trans man, when, you know, when I passed really well, all of a sudden it was like I wasn't welcome in these spaces anymore until they knew. And then you get that icky feeling of you only want me here because of that.
Yeah, for sure. Like,
and, you know, now I have the D-trans aspect where no community wants me. No one. Like, I'm still part of the I'm part of the LGB part, but I've lost people that I thought they liked me for me and it didn't matter what I was.
Right.
But then all of a sudden, detransitioning was the thing that I've been called a traitor.
Mm. I've been, me too.
You know, it's...
Me too.
They don't want me. The rest of the world doesn't want me.
That's not true.
It can often feel that way.
It feels really isolating.
Like, this is not a club.
It's not a club.
And it's not like a personality trait that I'm just taking up. And God forbid one day I change my mind. I won't, but like, or something happens where I have to detransition. I would hope that the people who stood by my side through everything else would still be there for me because of who I am, period. And not because of an effing label over my head.
And even when I transition.
Yet we're all here like fighting for these labels. So wild. Yet we are still acknowledging the existence of an LGBTQ+ community. Everything that was just said in there negates the existence of an LGBTQ+ community. What if they want to live on the principles that they just espoused, you should disband that. And there should be no such thing as an LGBTQ+ community. But it will exist. And they will probably continue to perpetuate the very community that will never find congruence because community, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. Taylor, are you going to say something?
Just that, yeah, like you're kind of saying, talking out of both sides of your mouth when you say, like, unless you accept my labels and define me according to my labels and, you know, accept the way that we are supposed to think about the LGBT community and all of our tenets and all this stuff and, you know, unless you're fighting transphobia alongside me and you're an ally, then you're not accepting me. And then at the same time, but the real people who would really stand by me wouldn't matter about my labels at all because who I really am is not attached to any of those labels at all. It's like, well, you can't have both of those. You can't like blackmail all of your family and society into accepting these labels and then also believe that you're not really defined by those at the end of the day and that people who really love you don't care about those labels or shouldn't care about those labels. And I think earlier in the video, Samantha said, you know, when I came out as a woman, I told my dad, like, you know, you need to accept this or bye.
Yeah.
And that's so manipulative. It's like it's a blackmailing the person who loves you most in the world into indulging your delusions. Because let's say it's not this particular thing. It's, you know, some other thing where you think you're a unicorn or, you know, who knows what. But like a person who loves you, they don't hate you just because they don't agree with your belief about yourself in this particular context. And to say that unless you agree with me, I'm going to cut off a relationship, the problem's on your end of things, not on theirs. And, you know, you have disagreements with your parents, obviously, and you're still able to have a relationship. And that just speaks to this underlying reality that we all know deep down that what matters most is not all these labels. It's not all these sexualities and genders and race stuff. And all. It's we're human beings and we should be defined by who we are, our personalities, our talents, our gifts, our just what makes you, you. And, you know, all this stuff, they play factors, but who you really are is not really about any one of those individual things. And just thinking of yourself as an individual first and relating to other people, relating to the world as an individual is so much more satisfying. Cause like you were saying before, you don't need the world's, you don't need other people's acceptance to validate who you are at that point. Once you've accepted yourself, then you're empowered to now go out and live life and be happy and without needing it in labels to validate you, without needing other people to validate you. And so it's funny that he literally just said the quiet part out loud. So he knows it and deep in his heart, but, you know, I mean, I guess I should be saying she, but whatever. But I just to underscore the point, like, you know, we want to acknowledge reality. We want to stick to it, but I have compassion for these people too. And it's not it's not just about ramming my views down your throat, but it is like, hey man, like I get it.
Yeah. And you mentioned Samantha and the parent thing. Parents are so often just pushed by the wayside when it comes to this whole entire topic. And parents are losing custody. They're being told, you know, if your kid says that they feel like a different gender, you must immediately affirm that and do that. Where's the conversation about a parent being able to grieve the loss of their child? Because that is what is happening here. A parent whose child comes to them and says, I want to change my sex, you are losing the person that you've known, that you've raised from baby to adulthood now. That person is gone, or at the very least is going to undergo very big changes. It's going to be mutilated. It's going to go through an entire process that completely changes their body and their mind, because that is what hormones do. It's a complete physiological shift. Where is the space that those people get to grieve? There is none. And the trans community in particular, if we even want to call them that, trans activists in particular, come after them and say, well, how dare you? You need to immediately accept everything. No, those people should be allowed the space and the time to grieve and to sort of rationalize what's happening in front of them. And parents should be respected in that sense.
I dealt with the traitor. To everyone, it was, you know, oh, you want to be a man and the patriarchy. And I was like, I get it. But also, but what I found very interesting was like this divide between trans men and trans women. When I first started doing a lot of advocacy, I was told that just being in the space, that I was taking up too much room, that I was taking up too much space and don't speak and all of these things. And I was like, wait a minute, but I'm trans too, right? Yeah. This community also belongs to us too. Right. So that was something that I grappled with for a while.
Because it doesn't belong to you.
I hung out with a lot of gay women. And then when I transitioned, I definitely lost my space there. And that was like really hard for me to navigate, because being shunned out of these female spaces for me was really hard and difficult.
The ever-present theme that I'm hearing is space, belong, space, belong, space, belong, which just really says to me that something probably happened when these people were children or in their formative years that just made them feel a deep sense of not belonging anywhere. And had maybe even one person reached out to these people and said, you are completely beautiful just the way you are. And I want to know who you are as the person you are today. And you are accepted within this space. In fact, we are friends. This is a friendship that we now have. I wonder how many people go through life and don't get that experience, and it leads to extremes like this, because that seems to be the through line here, is just a lack of acceptance of oneself all throughout childhood, and then trying to find that externally by going to, you know, your female group of friends who are, you know, in school with you, or the male group of friends in the locker room, and then feeling, oh, this is not the space for me. So it seems like a lot of these issues just are hinging upon just not being able to find people who accept you for who you are and want to be friends with you. And I'm sure that resonates with a lot of people, because we all go through those moments in our lives. But if you go through that to an extended length of time, I think the natural thing to think is, oh, there's something wrong with me, because there can't be something wrong with everybody else, and everybody else doesn't want to hang out with me, and everybody else doesn't want to be friends with me, so it must be something internally wrong with me, and maybe I was born in the wrong body. And you wake up every morning and you hate yourself because you think that other people hate you, and I can guarantee you, other people are just living in their own world, and they have no idea what their actions are causing and how much they are affecting individuals across from them. And I would say for the most part, people aren't going to bed at night being like, you know what, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and I'm not going to accept Jennifer. And I hate Jennifer and she doesn't belong here. Although they might practice that in their daily lives, they are more concerned with their own insecurities and their own failings in life than they are with anything that has to do with you. So if you are not feeling accepted by other people, it's probably not because there is something wrong with you. And you should beware of the people who are willing to sit in front of you at, say, a gender clinic or a psychiatrist or a therapist and go, well, yeah, there must be something wrong with you, and we can fix that with X medication or hormones or surgeries. You will find acceptance. It just takes time for some people. And that is what it seems has been expressed by everybody here. It's just a lack of somebody saying, I accept you. And that's really sad. I mean, of course, you're going to do whatever you can to sort of fit into a new group, and how devastating it must be to go through this entire process of medically transitioning and go to the group that's supposed to accept you and still not be accepted. Oh yeah, my gosh.
That's horrible. I was, as you're talking, I was reminded that I had a youth pastor once who said, if you're worried about what other people are thinking about you, don't, because they aren't thinking about you. They're thinking about themselves. And yeah. I think that that's just a reality. I was listening to this playlist of Akira the Don, who does these like remixes of Jordan Peterson and Jocko Willink and Joe Rogan and people like talking with like weird trap music over it. I don't know, but it's like super motivating. So mm-hmm. I was at the gym and there was one track with David Goggins, and he was talking about how when he was young, he moved around a lot. He didn't have his father present, all this, and was at a new school and had to, you know, go to lunch. And his first instinct was to try to like work his way into the popular table and play the game and put on a face. And he was like, I caught myself performing as somebody I'm not. Of course, he uses colorful language. So he was like, and you know, I was bullshitting, and I was going throughout my life trying to earn the approval of these other people that I didn't even like and didn't even care about, didn't even like what they were doing, and was adapting my entire being to try to get their approval. And he's like, one day I just decided, you know, F it, that this is bullshit. I'm just going to go and sit at a lunch table by myself and be content with the fact that I have accepted myself. Yeah. And over the course of time, he did that. And he was like, you know what? I'm just going to sit at this lunch table by myself, eat my lunch, and just be confident in the fact that I don't need this validation from other people. And as he did that, guess what started happening? A lot of people started congregating, and his lunch table became the lunch table that everyone wanted to be at, because that confidence, just people saw that and wanted to follow it. And it's funny that we're often so afraid to just be ourselves, and being ourselves, not by adopting all these external identities, but by simply accepting ourselves. We're so afraid to do that, but it's when we do that is when your life begins to actually take shape, and when who you are actually begins to flourish and blossom, and people are attracted to you, and you begin to find your place in the world, and you start that healthy path on your life. Mm-hmm. But to your point, you can go until you do that, until you come to the place where you're like, okay, you know what? I don't need to be validated by the world. I don't need to be validated by these people. I don't need to be validated from all these external forces. Until you can spend a lifetime searching for that. And your life has hardly started and has not started until you're free of that.
Yeah. And then it's not until you do that that you recognize that other people are just walking insecurities. And you start to look at the people who were once mean to you or didn't accept you, and where you would have felt like a deep hatred or fire, or you would have felt like you needed to change something about yourself. You feel pity for the people that you see running around acting the way that they act, because you can see through it. It's like looking through glass when people are full of hatred and vitriol and they're bullying and all this stuff. It is everything that they hate about themselves being projected onto the world. So you can let that influence your view of yourself and say, I need to change something about myself. Or you can look at that person and go, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, somebody comes to you and says, you're fat, you're ugly, you're this, you're... I am so sorry. And whatever you're going through, I hope there's somebody there to support you through what you're going through right now, because it doesn't seem like you have that support. And I'm sorry to hear that. And then you move on and you go about your day, because that is literally all it is. We're going to finish this video and get into super chats. But
and then when I got to the trans male community, there was a lot of competition. Who looked the best? Who passed the best? Like, that was very difficult.
Oh, yeah.
Security.
Fortunately, I had a full beard, so yeah. It was, like, an easy, like, yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, but still, yeah. Like, I heavily resonate with trans men still, and I definitely resonate with trans women from detransitioning and gender nonconforming people. So it's like, where do I belong?
You resonate with everybody. You resonate with everybody because these are human experiences. There is no one place that you belong. There's no metric for seeing who you resonate with the most and then saying, I'm a part of this tribe. Everybody has gone through what you've gone through in some capacity, and that's what's being lost here. There's no need to go and find a community of people that you need to belong with. And I think some people have recognized that on this panel.
Weird position to be yeah. in, because it's like one community, like I said, doesn't really want you, but you don't fit in. You can't really go all the way back, so you don't fit in with the rest of them.
Man.
We just shouldn't have to categorize. Yeah. Like, right. We shouldn't have to float around, wonder where we belong. Like,
we have, like, we have the other detransitioners, but even then, we're all still vastly different individuals who have vastly different life experience, political views, religious beliefs.
Right.
You know,
you're not just a detransitioner.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Experience how we got
trans
about
community.
It.
Right.
In some ways, it's empowering, because it feels like you're, even though all this happened, you're being seen as an individual for almost the first time after, you know, spending my high school years being lumped in by both the LGBT community and the rest of the people in a category. But it's also very isolating because you don't have really that community support that other places get.
Bye.
I just got to say, as they're talking about this, you know, the LGBTQIA plus community seems to have the same, a similar, I'm picking up a similar dynamic to something I recently experienced with my volleyball community. So 6 years ago, I moved to LA, picked up beach volleyball, met a ton of people. And I spent years playing volleyball with pretty much the same 50, 60 some odd people every weekend and went out with them, hung out all the time, like on the weekends. And, you know, since moving away, I have like a couple that I'm still friends with and like in going beyond just that hobby. Mm-hmm. And I actually just visited last weekend and played a little bit and met some of them. And I was talking to guys I've known for years. And I'm like, so by the way, what do you do for work?
Right.
Because I haven't talked to them since I left, of course. And just because you have one thing in common with people and you have, doesn't mean you need to put all the eggs of your hope for belonging in the basket of that one single community. That humans are much more sophisticated than that. And one of them said, like, you know, this is why we're there. Why don't defining yourself like this is setting yourself up for disappointment, because identifying as an individual means that you have so much more complexity to who you are. And I'm reminded of C.S. Lewis wrote about this. He had a small group of really tight friends at Oxford that I would meet all the time. And I think one of them passed away. And he wrote about how, like, in a cluster of friends, there are different people draw different parts of you out of you. Mm-hmm. Different people relate to different things inside you. And, you know, you should think of your friend circle as like, hey, this person, I relate to them over this. And having like, it's like a circle that's holistic. And you might have a friend over here that has absolutely nothing in common with a friend over here. But all that speaks to our complexity as human beings and as individuals. And so it's just, my heart goes out to people who are sold a bill of goods that, hey, if you just join this community, you'll have all the acceptance that you'll ever need and you'll be able to find your true self. It's like, no, finding your true self doesn't come from one single community. It comes from being yourself and accepting yourself and then going out into the world. And if you have this interest over here, go pursue that. If you have this hobby over here, you do that and you meet people and you have those intersections and then you develop a fuller, richer sense of your identity just by being.
Yeah.
And that's such an exciting, adventurous, you know, path to way and way to go about life. And I just, my heart goes out to people who are handed a box and just say, yep, this is all you get, because of course it's going to disappoint you.
Yeah. The worst thing you can do is corral yourself into one community. Like, it's just, it's never going to be fulfilling for you. Unfortunately, it just doesn't work that way. Let's get into super chats. Let me see. Oh my gosh. I think we have quite a few.
Do you have them or I could pull them up?
I think I have them.
Okie doke.
Okay. Let's see. Is this from today? That's not from today. Okay, this is from today. Perfect. Love you, Amala and Taylor, says Jackie Hernandez. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Verity Deerdorf says, as someone whose name gets mispronounced by almost everyone I meet, it is such a struggle to decide to correct someone or not. Yeah, you know, is that your real name? Did I just say that correctly? I don't know. I highly doubt it. But thank you. And that was your first super chat for the show. It's a collective struggle. You know, I feel you on that one. This next one is from a scout in a Bradley. Says, loved your point of view on this. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thank you for your support. Also said, this is for your presidential run. I doubt that'll ever happen, but who knows?
Starting the super PAC early.
It's not on my my bingo card for this lifetime, but who knows? Who knows? Jeffrey Jackson says, love you, Amala. I think you're awesome. You're awesome too, Taylor. Thank you.
Yeah, I see the little accents on there. Is that like phonetic spelling or something?
That's what I was thinking it was.
Maybe he was trying to emphasize pronouncing your name correctly.
Yeah,
in written form.
I think so. Dharma Initiative says, if immigrants can make it in the U.S., anyone can. Yeah, I mean, I think obviously there's always going to be people who didn't get the right cards. But for the most part, this is the land of opportunity. Very much is. Scripture Shores, thank you for your super chat. No message, but we appreciate you. Tex Fraud says, in reality, we have one drop of black blood in us. Science has confirmed that the first woman, Eve, was black, so it's in our DNA. Check the black box, guys. We have the pass. If it helps you get your scholarship.
Sounds like Dr. Fauci talking. The science has said that this is what it is.
Follow the science. Follow the science. I mean, if it helps you get your scholarship, do whatever you got to do. Dharma Initiative said, please watch What Are We Doing to White People by Charlie Chan. He addresses the normalization of overt racism by not only BIPOC, but woke whites. Yeah, I saw that video and went super viral. The Asian guy. I do need to watch it, but I haven't set aside the time. Haley says, I'm white and my mom was worried I wouldn't get into my competitive grad school program because I wasn't diverse enough. She said, at least I'm a woman, LOL. Yeah, just have a sob story, be a woman, or be a person of color. And if you can do, you know, 23andMe or Ancestry.com and find a little bit of Native American in the background, run with it, babes. Run with it. Isaac Gorski says, people get Isaac wrong all the time. I just assume that many people have never encountered a large amount of names outside of where they are from and what's common there. Yeah, it's, you know, it's totally normal to mispronounce names. I've not heard mispronouncing Isaac, but...
Isaac.
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 Isaac. I don't know how you would say it.
Maybe it's the Gorski.
Isaac.
Who knows? Give us some alternative pronunciations that you hear in the chat, Isaac.
Lada gave her first super chat. Thank you so much. When will we see that race doesn't exist the way they think it does? When do you stop qualifying as black, half black, quarter black, 1/16th black? We a mix. I agree with you. I don't know when it's going to stop, but I hope it stops soon.
Isn't this one of the things you say, that race is more of a social construct than gender?
Yeah, race is way more of a social construct than your gender or your sex is. I guess I should say sex if we want to be scientifically correct there. Race is just, you know, anybody's anything virtually when it comes to race. And you could cross the lines and boundaries of race, which we do all the time. Like, how many people called Obama our first black president when he's half black? I mean, the bounds of race are way more testable than the bounds of sex. So it's just crazy that we spit at people like Rachel Dolezal, who said, you know, I'm a black woman born in a white body, but Dylan Mulvaney's on Bud Light beer cans. It just makes absolutely no sense. Clown world. Michael Jackson resurrected. Thank you for your super chat. Let me ask this. If trade or taking of African people never happened, how many African Americans can say with 100% proof that they would be in America today and not suffering in Africa? First super chat from Michael Jackson. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would say not everybody in Africa is suffering. So that's a point to hone in. But at that time, they probably weren't doing the best, especially since, you know, they were being sold into slavery. But that is a point to be made. I mean, America is one of the greatest countries to ever exist, if not the greatest country to ever exist. And now there's a lot of African descent people who are living here. What are the odds that that would be the case if not for the slave trade? It's of course not to justify, but it is just something that should be able to be acknowledged because it simply is what happened. It's wild. Anyways, Kirsten S. says, male to female trans lose ability to orgasm post-bottom surgery. That is something that many people are talking about, and there's a lot of side effects. I've seen many detransitioners talk about that. And while some people might not view that as something that is important, I can guarantee that psychologically that would mess somebody up, especially male to female. Are you kidding? Like, I can't imagine. I just cannot imagine. Next, 1800 Young Trash says, Dr. Phil's show is ending. Amala, this is your chance to take this show in front of a live studio audience. Go on national TV and make Oprah money. I don't think I'm going to be Dr. Phil's successor. I don't even think Dr. Phil has a successor. I think it's just...
He was getting too based there at the end. They're like, oh, he's betraying a little, you know, sliver of conservative inclination. This guy, send him to the ranch.
Right. He's done. Maybe that's why he used his last season to sort of like hone in on who he actually is as a person. He's just like, you know what? It's my last time here. They can't fire me. I'm going to show people how I really feel.
The View did reach out to Amala once, by the way, but they chickened out.
They did chicken out. But that's
didn't
all right.
Want none of that smoke.
Didn't want that heat. Tex Fraud says, hearing the male to female bottom surgery honestly hurts. It's a legit open wound that you have to force open. As a woman, I cringe and feel phantom pain just hearing about it. Yep. I don't think a lot of people recognize exactly what that means surgically, but it is not only lopping off your male parts, but creating the female opening. And for those of you who are unaware, maybe considering this, you have to use a dilation tool every single day to keep that area open the way it is supposed to be open. Can you just think about how painful that would be? And it's for extended periods of time. It's just wild. Dicks and butts, always good to have you. The black that are also albino community are really getting the short end of the stick on both sides here. YouTube didn't let me put those two words next to each other. Oh, okay, so the black albino community is having a hard time. Yeah, because they're black, but they don't get the oppression points because nobody can see it on them. It's really, really does suck.
You should get more oppression points, right?
I don't know.
Albino is like another intersection, unless are we not allowed to call that?
Nah, because they'll say like, they'll be like, you benefit from white privilege, even though you're black. Like Logic, you know, the rapper.
Mm.
Let's see.
I don't know, but I'll take your word for it.
Slabby Patty says, this is my first live that I've been able to catch. I love the show. Just wanted to let you know. I appreciate y'all. This episode really highlights how much we need conversation between differing opinions. Thank you for your super chat. And yeah, I think it's always what we're trying to highlight on this show. So I'm glad that that is hitting for y'all, that y'all are recognizing that. Alfredo Ortiz says, the only acceptance I'm searching for is God's. Taylor, can I get an amen?
Well, I might actually have to amend this because I would say I'm not searching for God's acceptance. I'm living from it because what? God already extended his acceptance to me in Christ through the cross. So that is how I think about it, at least. But I get what you're saying. But I mean, in a technical sense, I would have to say, no, I'm not looking for God's acceptance.
There we go.
Already got it.
All right. Kate Svensson says, thank you for what you do. You give me hope for the future. Thank you for listening. A10 Warthog sends two hearts. Appreciate it. Stephen Call says, as someone with gender dysphoria, I needed this. Thank you for your free super chat. Wow. That does hit hard for me that you are experiencing that and that this has helped in some way, shape, or form. We are happy to have you. And please do continue to listen and see if anything meets your heart, because that's what we're trying to do here. Hopefully save you from the short end of the stick when it comes to this stuff. The autistic professor says, used to love labels and embracing intersectional identities, but I'm sick of the BS. I'm sick of the hate and violence the progressive left promotes. Guys, leave the identity stuff behind. Please leave it behind. It was hard for me to leave it behind, even when I decided I was conservative. I was like, oh, I'm a conservative now. Let's make my TikTok handle half black conservative, which was just like holding on to identity even harder. And just like, oh, so glad to be on the other end of just leaving all of that behind. And hopefully that sticks.
I asked Amala before the show because we were watching some of this stuff, and I was like, did you ever have like a phase like in middle school where you like the goth kid or the emo kid or the prep or the jock? And you said you were
I'm a musical theater kid, and I still am. So that stuck. It wasn't a phase. It's not a phase, Mom.
So Dylan Mulvaney's in your community.
Yes, Dylan Mulvaney. Oh, no. I'm like, no, okay. There's this thing that happens every year for like Broadway fanatics and people who love musical theater called Miscast, where they like bring in all these very prominent singers and stuff, and they sing songs that they could never be casted for or whatever. So I love looking forward to this. I'm like watching clips from it. And Dylan Mulvaney is on Miscast singing in New York, and I'm like, okay, you know what? This is just how it's going to be. The next Broadway show that's going to be a big hit is going to be starring Dylan Mulvaney and whatever. I've just accepted that this is the reality. For me,
he's on The Price is Right performing. I mean, this guy's clearly not looking for the limelight at all.
No,
never has. And
no.
This is all super. He's the most authentic, stunning, and brave person we've ever seen.
Stunning and brave. I mean, I can't blame him though. If like that's your dream and somebody's like literally throwing it at your feet, of course you're going to take it. So, God.
Someone just said Taylor's looking like the devil on the shoulder of a cartoon character. Because someone else said I look like a thought bubble. Do you guys like this view or is it weird?
I like the circles.
I think it's kind of cool. I don't know. Let us know.
The autistic professor says, the left has driven me to go full force into Daily Wire Prager and Ali B. Stuckey. Not conservative or religious, but the most reason comes from right-leaners. Hey, you know, we welcome you. Welcome. Jessica Raylene says, if you can't accept yourself, how can you fully expect others to accept you? You're changing who you are, everything about yourself. Yeah, I mean, that's a tough pill to swallow. And of course, when you're a teenager, it's so hard. Nobody wants to hear you need to accept yourself before other people accept you. Like, nobody ever wants to hear that, especially as a teenager. You're just constantly searching for external validation. But it honestly, it is the truth, because if you don't understand and accept yourself, what are you even putting out into the world that you want people to accept from you? Like, you need to find out who you are first before you decide what other people are even accepting. So if you're on a journey to find yourself, then why do you need other people to accept that from you? Because you don't even know who you are yet. You haven't even figured it out. You haven't even packaged the product you're trying to sell. Dharma Initiative says, to unite the human race, we need a common enemy. Look at 9/11 and how the U.S. was united. The only force I can see uniting the globe is an alien invasion. I don't like to think that that's the case. I don't think we need a common enemy, meaning we need to have a fighting force driven towards one thing. I think you could have common ideals and something common that you're all striving towards. I think that's necessary. And until we can figure out what that is, I think we're going to have a hard time. You could also have a commonality in outcomes that you don't want to see. Like, well, if we could start agreeing more on what is something that's unacacceptable, then we would be more united as individuals. I don't necessarily think we need an enemy. I just think that an enemy happens to be a really effective way to get people on the same page. And it's unfortunately.
And to your point, when you clearly define your ideals, then you also can clearly understand what is a threat to those or what is antithetical to those. And you have moral clarity. That's why, in the aftermath of a tragedy, you always want your leaders to come out and just say, in no uncertain terms, this was a heinous act of evil. We condemn this unequivocally, just because it creates moral clarity and defines, hey, this is what we're striving towards. This is not who we are. This is not what we want. But that's what's also so pernicious about the affirmative action conversation that we reacted to earlier. If you are saying that we need to discriminate, we need to sacrifice the principle of fairness on the altar of equity, then you're destroying that common shared goal. You're saying that's we're no longer going to define ourselves by the principle of fairness and say that we're all striving towards that and agree that that's good and the opposite of fairness, discrimination, is bad. We're going to say that I need to step in and play God in this situation and balance the scales how I see fit, and I'm going to be the arbiter and judge of that, and no one deserves that power. And it's also contradicts the first principle of fairness that we should all enshrine and be abiding by. So that's what's so scary about this new woke ideology, is a lot of what it does is sets itself up as the arbiter of how to fix everything and even the playing field, and at the expense of first principles. And the first principles are what America was founded on. I'm not saying that we always lived up to them, but it is what we aspire to. And that's how we get that unity, is by saying, this is the people that we want to be. This is the people that we aspire to be. And anyways, I sorry to go on a little tangent there, but I did have that boiling in my brain earlier when that guy said that. So I came all full circle. So thank you for bringing it back.
Yeah. Sparking that thought. Verone Kowaluk. Lux, I don't know how to say your last name. I apologize. And please invite Shape on your podcast. He is precious. I mean, I'd be open to that. We should reach out. I think that'd be a great conversation. M1U, thank you for your super chat. A lot of us earthlings are always about me, me, me. It's so tiring. Can we all just get along? Don't wait till the aliens start bombarding us from space. Stay based and happy 1 million subscribers. I agree with you. Why can't we be friends? Why can't we be friends? Well, because some people are trying to transition children, so we kind of do have to address that. but there will always be something. But in a general sense, yeah, we need to start just accepting one another. A Scout in a Bradley says all humans have struggled with their sexuality at one point, from the manly man to girly girl. Yeah, I'm sure people. It is only natural. I don't know if everybody struggles with it, but it's only natural to have the thoughts that fall outside of the scope of who you thought you were. And that can be in regard to sexuality, can be in regard to anything. I'm sure there are teenage boys who are like, oh, you know, I can appreciate that that guy is attractive, but I'm not attracted to him. But if I can say that a guy is attractive, does that make me attracted to men? And snowball into this. Am I gay and blah, blah, blah? Am I bisexual or what's going on? And then it's just like, oh no, you can just appreciate that somebody else is attractive and that's it. Or it is more than that and you are attracted to men. There's all these different things that happen in life. And you should be given.
It's like when Andy on The Office was like, if I had a dream where Brad Pitt came up to me at a tiki bar or something and tried to kiss me. And he's like, I tried to resist at first a little bit. Like I think it was more of a hypothetical. He's like, I would resist maybe at first, but then I'd kind of just want to see what it's like.
I imagine that happens in a lot of people's brains. Just most definitely happens in a lot of people's brains. It's not weird. It's not something you should be ashamed of. It's just literally normal. Everybody has crazy thoughts all the time. Doesn't mean every thought you have is who you are.
But also some thoughts you should be in jail.
Some of them, yes. Some of them you should be in jail. Straight to the gulag. Kathy S. says, woke culture dangerously empowers people as more enlightened than everyone else. Scholars, scientists are dismissed as bigots, misinformed. Truth is simply what is accepted by those enlightened. Yes, very, very true. Once you take on the badge, you know all and you are the arbiter of truth. And whatever that truth may be, even though it's your truth, his truth, my truth, her truth. I'm having trouble keeping up. Amala, you have to pronounce my name with an African accent. Kofi Kwe. Kofi Kwe. Thank you for your super chat. I hope I did that.
Why
justice.
Are you Kwe?
Why are you Kwe? Who is to say that I am Kwe? You are Kwe. I love that clip so much. Also, why are you running? Why are you running?
These are fantastic. I don't know that one.
Oh, okay, well, we'll have to show that another day on the show. We're going to make that part of our new show intro if we ever make one. Let's see. What else have we got? Bozardic says, I finally caught a live. Sad to see that I missed the live, but I'm excited to watch the show after. Been deaf looking forward to this video. Love y'all. Thank you. And I'm glad you got to catch a live. And this is your first super chat. We appreciate you. Then we have Hugo Jesus or Hugo Jesus. You opened my eyes and influenced my decision to leave the left. I regret voting for Biden and seeing how divided our country has become is truly demotivating me to start a family. America is hurting. Hugo, I appreciate the fact that you said you've been influenced by this show, and we're happy to have you. Welcome to our little club that we got going on over here. And you know what? You shouldn't feel too demotivated to start a family. You are still large and in charge, and you can help. You know, as bad as things might be on the outside in this country or like in life in general, there are so many wonderful things that are happening on any given day. And if you really just allow yourself to sit in what's wonderful in life, you shouldn't rob anybody of that experience. And that goes for your future children. So your future children are going to experience something wonderful, even if there's other crazy stuff going on. So don't worry too much about that. SD, thank you for your super chat, says, why does it look like Taylor is just Amala's imagination? another person says, Ill Monk says, Taylor looks like your thought bubble. So it sounds like you guys are liking it. That's what I'm hearing. You know, if we're getting comments on it, we're keeping it. Jess the Mess says, I'm a teacher and you have helped me so much understanding how to talk to my middle school kids to deal with their body and sexuality. Thank you. Oh, gosh, you guys are, I need to watch what I say. I was listening to this Sondheim, which if you guys do not know who Stephen Sondheim is, I'm a musical theater nerd, so just bear that in mind. But look him up and listen to his music. And there's this specific song that he has called Children Will Listen. And you should listen to the Bernadette Peters version of it. And the lyrics in this are just so profound and so beautiful. And I want to find the perfect one where I'll find it and we'll get to it later. We'll go through super chats and then I'll say that to you. But specifically, if you are working around children and the philosophy that you should have in sharing with children and being a role model for them, this song is just the perfect explanation of what that should look like. A scout in a Bradley says, need Larry Elder or Thomas Sowell as the angel on the other shoulder. Put them in.
He literally is. Look, he's right behind you.
Right. We got this one.
On the opposite
side. And then we got Taylor on the other end.
Yeah, so I guess that I am the devil then, because I can't. I'm not more of an angel than Tom Sowell.
Let's see. Alfredo Ortiz says, pedophilia is unacceptable, but there are still people defending it and others afraid to denounce it. We do need a common enemy to unite us. I think we're just getting bent on what the definition of enemy. I mean, an enemy could be an idea. Pedophilia is an idea and a practice more than anything. So, yeah, that would be a common enemy that people can get behind. But it's more just about like values and how you go through the world. Let's see. I wish people, this is from the autistic professor, I wish people would talk more about cultural history rather than race. Irish and Scottish, seriously impacted by oppression, but doesn't count because white. White does not mean one origin. There's cultural differences. Yep. I mean, yeah, it's a struggle shared by many. And they're all saying, you know what? I went through a lot of crazy stuff. My ancestors went through a lot of crazy stuff. And here we are. But because you're white, it's invalidated. Anyways, I think this is the last super chat. Timothy ML says, my first super chat to you guys. Thank you so much. I'm a huge fan. I love all the work you guys do. Anyways, I just wanted to ask if you considered the sterilization through transitioning as maybe a form of population control. Not necessarily. I do just think it's a side effect of transitioning. I don't think anybody is necessarily like coming at this with like the nefarious idea of this is going to be the way that we stave off population growth, because there's quite honestly not enough people identifying as transgender for this to be a problem that truly affects the population. I don't think that's the intent behind this, but it would be a side effect if it happened.
Yeah, there's a stronger argument probably for abortion being something like that, but even that I think is more of a side effect of just bad perception of bad politics or bad perception of reality. There, we did miss one from Slabby Patty.
Okay.
He said, I just find it so perplexing that we went through a time where labels were terrible and we fought against it. And nowadays society builds their personalities based on a label. Crazy.
Yeah, we are all flipped upside down. Another one from Astro Creep Spider says, Amala, you should look to the upper left and Taylor should look to the lower right. So it looks like you guys see each other. Love the show. Been watching for a while. We are always constantly. Well, Scott is the one who's always worried about that. And he's the one who handles all that because he is more of a perfectionist in that sense. I just go in where the wind takes me. So I don't even know.
if you guys did as this person asked, you would look like the Brady Bunch opening.
Yeah, well, we're just looking.
Right, I'm waving. There we go. Hi.
Did we get it? Is that it?
Did you go the wrong way?
I have no idea. I don't know which way I'm supposed to look to make that happen. I'm supposed to look this way? Okay. We'll figure it out. We'll workshop that for next time. Anyways, I found the Sondheim lyrics. I was listening to this song this morning. And I was like, I need to write an entire essay about this song and how it pertains to our current culture. I'm just going to read one paragraph from this. And this is specifically to the teacher who was talking about how to speak with children. And for anybody who's around children, talking about literally anything, just think about the impact that you have. Careful with what you say, children will listen. Careful with what you do, children will see and learn. Guide them, but step away. Children will glisten. These lyrics are written wrong. Tamper with what is true, and children will turn, if just to be free. And careful before you say, listen to me, because children will listen. Children will listen. It is so profound. Again, go and listen to the version of Bernadette Peters singing this song. And if it does not hit you in your heart, I don't know what else will. It is so very true. Children absorb everything around them, no matter what you do. And not even with just children, with people in general. Be really careful before you tell somebody to listen to you, because you have no idea how it's going to impact them. And in watching this video, this Jubilee video, it seems like everybody in this video had somebody just say something to them, and it sent them on a path that many of them are not going to be able to come back from. So careful with what you say, and careful before you say, listen to me, because my gosh, you can mess somebody up.
That sounded like Mr. Rogers could have wrote those lyrics.
Yeah, yeah.
So wholesome.
It is so, so very wholesome. That's from Into the Woods, for those of you who are asking. And that you guys can find Into the Woods on YouTube and watch the full show if you're interested. You're probably not, but if you are. SD says, Amala, you are very pretty, so don't take this the wrong way. But has anybody ever said you look like Franklin the Turtle? Yes!
What?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Who else? Franklin the Turtle. And then what was that one that Sabrina said that I look like?
I don't know.
Sabrina texted. Ducky. Is it Ducky from Land Before Times?
Oh, I could see that maybe a little bit.
Okay, hold on.
Let me
look it up.
Franklin the Turtle. That's hilarious.
Is it Ducky? I don't remember what the name of this character is. This one. I'll take it. I think they're cute. Let me see. Franklin the Turtle. I do have a very turtle looking face. You know what? I'll take Franklin. Franklin's cute.
See, guys, this is why Amala can take it because she's not craving people's acceptance, like we talked about. She's secure in herself. So you can say she looks like Franklin the Turtle, and she doesn't get all insecure.
I think I do kind of look like Franklin. We kind of have the same like little jaw shape going on. I think that's the perfect note to end the show on, that I look like Franklin the Turtle. So thank you for that. That actually made me giggle. Guys, thank you so much for watching. Please leave a comment down below how you felt about these videos. How do you feel about Dr. Phil and affirmative action? How do you feel about the detransitioners versus transitioners on Jubilee's Middle Ground? Also, be on the lookout this weekend when my episode of Middle Ground comes out, male feminist versus female anti-feminist. Please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single time we're live. That's Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. Plus, we post videos on Tuesday and Thursday because we won't leave you hanging. Tomorrow's video is about looking through old American commercials and comparing them to the woke ones that we now get now, and the different values that have shifted in us as consumers and the different messages that are starting to resonate with us, which is really weird and really freaky to watch. But yeah, you guys can see that video tomorrow. Sign up for my email list by going to the link in the description down below. Also, sign up for our Discord if you want to talk to like-minded individuals who are free-thinking and willing to have conversations. If you are feeling a lack of acceptance, which I think was a big theme in today's episode, join our Discord. Start talking to people. There's a bunch of people there. And if you are accepted by no one else, you are accepted by the people on this show. So welcome, and hopefully that saves you some heartache later down the line in life. Thank you all for being here. And let's work on accepting ourselves before we get back to tomorrow's show. That's your homework. Bye, guys.